The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio, streaming on Facebook Live. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. I could do a whole Big Lead on just the stuff I heard in your newscast there, Ursula, but I'm not going to.
A lot going on.
So they say that we don't have enough toilets for the homeless. I would say maybe we have too many homeless for the toilets that we have, and maybe we shouldn't have policies that attract homeless people from around the country to our region, which will dovetail nicely with the guest who's coming on with me at 12:30 this afternoon, King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg. He's the one who announced, you know, several months ago on our show, he said that he's not going to prosecute low-level drug offenses anymore. And I think that this is a disastrous policy. I think that the word is out that this is the best place in the country to be a drug vagrant. And I appreciate public officials who know that I'm going to disagree with them coming on. So we'll talk with Dan Satterberg about this policy, how he thinks it's working out. We'll do that at 12:30 this afternoon. Pramila Jayapal? She says she's going to have Medicare for all. Everybody in the country will have medical care and prescription drug coverage. Government running things always turns out impeccable. So, yeah, that's a great plan. The only thing I liked in the newscast is that people got the pet food donations. That's good news. People stepped up for that. But we got a lot, and we'll talk about this circus this morning, this whole Michael Cohen thing, where I think this whole thing is so despicable. A guy who's an admitted perjurer, he's going to prison, he violated attorney-client privilege, he so clearly despises the president, and now he is being regarded as this heroic figure who's speaking out. And it's just unbelievable to watch and listen to the desperation that so many people have for, you know, any sound bites that are going to take down the president. And the president has lots and lots of faults. But to have Michael Cohen, the one who's pointing it out, a perjurer, somebody who's lied to Congress, I mean, this is unprecedented. A guy who's going to prison for lying to Congress is then called as the star witness by the same Congress that he lied to. That's just never happened before, but there's never been a level of hatred for a president like there is right now. So, but we'll give it some coverage through the afternoon because I know that it's a big story in some people's minds. I think the whole thing's so despicable. But with all of that as mere prelude, let's get to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Bizarro World.
I'll tell you what else is despicable, and that is how crime on the streets around here, and this gets to what I'll talk to the prosecutor about as well. Yesterday, we told you about the number of repeat offenders who are committing a vast majority of the crimes. 100 people have been identified who have committed 3,500 crimes around here. That's 35 per person. And one of the guys that we played sound bites of yesterday, Cairo 7, talked to the street vagrant named Travis Burge, who just bragged about his drug use.
That makes me functional, quite like meth. I use dirty needles. I shoot up AIDS.
You know what? You're going to get yourself sick if you keep doing that, man.
I go around and look for cops, and once I find cops, then I'll shoot up and I'll be like, best friends.
Sounds like a quality person. We have another story that's in the news today, and that is this guy who went into a 7-Eleven and held them up at knife point. And this is a guy, a felon, who has been booked 71 times. Jeremiah Crouch, he had just been released from prison days earlier when he walked into a Queen Anne 7-Eleven and held them up at knife point. Cairo 7 did the story. And listen to the kind of guy that we're releasing out of prison and putting back on the streets, threatening the lives of, you know, your fellow citizens, your neighbors, your spouse, your children. This is the kind of guy that we're putting back on the streets.
Police say 39-year-old Jeremiah Crouch was so angry he couldn't buy cigarettes with food stamps at this 7-Eleven last Tuesday.
Okay, let me stop it right there. Okay, good. He can't buy cigarettes with food stamps. Why are we giving food stamps to somebody who's been booked 71 times? Why do you and I have to give this guy handouts when he has that kind of a criminal history? I don't know how he would eat if he doesn't get food stamps, but I know that I don't want to pay for it. I'll give money to the Union Gospel Mission, and they can take in people who, you know, make an effort to turn their life around and get. I mean, that's what's so great about Union Gospel Mission. Is they'll give you a meal and they'll give you a bed, but you got to get into addiction treatment and you have to take positive steps in your life. Why in the world are you and I buying food stamps for a guy like this? Okay, let me start it over. I'll see how much further I can go without interrupting myself.
Police say 39-year-old Jeremiah Crouch was so angry he couldn't buy cigarettes with food stamps at this 7-Eleven last Tuesday. So he returned a short time later armed with a knife and robbed the place instead, stealing cigarettes and food, which was all caught on surveillance cameras. Court documents show Crouch has more than 24 theft convictions since 2001.
Okay, 24 convictions, not charges, not allegations. 24 convictions in the last 18 years. So that's like every 9 months he gets convicted of theft and is still out and about.
Among a long list of other convictions, Crouch is identified as one of the 100 prolific offenders, highlighted by a recent report commissioned by Neighborhood Districts and Seattle's tourism industry.
And this is what I was talking about, and we talked about it yesterday. 100 people identified as having committed 3,500 crimes, and we let them out and about.
I spoke to the store owner by phone who told me he's not surprised by Crouch's record and says it's getting increasingly difficult to do business in Seattle.
Well, and this is what's so heartbreaking is these business owners who the city council has contempt for. The people who create jobs, create tax base, the people who are the backbone, the economic engine of our society. And you have people like, pretty much everyone on the city council just despises them. They'll do everything to provide heroin for the addicts, but they won't provide any relief for the noble business owners among us.
At Five Corners Hardware, I spoke to Jill Wells, who says her store has also had its share of theft.
We don't know what to do. We have security cameras around here, and that's all we can do with, posting the pictures like we have been doing.
And, you know, I was watching the Cairo 7 story, and that's just a little neighborhood hardware store, and I love those places. You know, there was one that's closed in Ballard, Crown Hill Hardware. That was just the coolest little shop. I have a little Ace Hardware in my neighborhood. And you get to know the people there. Not only are they trying to compete with online retailers, but these little neighborhood hardware stores, they got to compete with Home Depot and Lowe's and all the big box stores, too. It's a tough gig. And when you compound it with city leaders who put these serial thieves back out on the streets, it just gets impossible for these business owners, and it makes me very, very sad for them. It makes me angry for us at, you know, our political lack of leadership.
Crouch has been booked 71 times since the year 2000 and had at least 130 warrants for failing to appear.
71 bookings, 24 theft convictions, over 100. Felony warrants. I mean, on and on.
We know that these individuals are causing a majority of the issues.
Yes, we do. And if we had leaders, we could do something about it, but we don't. We have criminals in charge, which brings me to the next story in the big lead.
The big lead. Damn. Your tax dollars at work.
Yeah, there's no question that we have a lot of criminals on the street because we have a lot of criminals in public office. And we told you a few days ago about how the 405 tolls apparently are here to stay, even though they were supposed to meet two sets of criteria. The tolls would have to cover operating expenses, and the toll lanes would have to move at a minimum average speed of 45 miles an hour, 90% of the time. Well, they don't. They don't go 45 miles an hour. And the Attorney General's office interpreted the legislation, and they parsed it. They said, no, they only had to do one or the other. When the language is clear that they had to meet both criteria for the toll lanes to continue operating. But Bob Ferguson, he operates the Attorney General's office in a criminal manner. And so that they can continue to rip off taxpayers for tens of millions of dollars with illegal toll lanes, that's what they're going to do. And so when you have criminals in charge politically, of course we're going to have criminals on the street. They had to change the language after they failed to meet the criteria. Here's the WSDOT director of tolling, Edward Berry, talking to Q13.
I'm specifically talking about two promises made to the public. One is not met, and all of a sudden you guys are gutting that from the language. It appears fishy. How could you explain it?
We're not gutting that language. That performance measure is still in there. And we're still going to report on that. If there's alternative ways that we can measure performance, that language will allow us to do that.
So they admit that they weren't meeting the requirements to continue operating toll lanes. But they just lie and cheat and steal because there's tens of millions of dollars at stake. So, yeah, when you wonder why we have so much criminality, why we have the worst property crime of any major city in the country, why we have so many criminals running the streets, because we have so many criminals in public office. When you vote for a criminal, don't be surprised when your money is stolen. Next up in the big lead.
The big lead. I sense a Dory rant coming on.
And then there's a story about a cyclist who's the latest to be killed around here. It happened on Monday on Rainier Avenue. A man was hit by a cyclist, was hit by a hit-and-run driver. And a witness talked to Cairo 7. Here's first of all, Gordon Pedelford of the Seattle Neighborhood Greenways says they're very frustrated at the danger that cyclists have to encounter.
Supposed to be 2016, then it was supposed to be 2017, then 2018, then 2019, and now the city is saying it's going to take until 2020 to make that full section safer. We're all heartbroken. There's just too many of these tragedies on Rainier Ave.
And Jasmine Becklam with Rainier Valley Greenways says the city needs to do more.
What the city did in 2015 was a good step, and we need them to finish the job.
Okay. I've talked about this for a long, long time. In fact, my friend Duff McKagan of Guns N' Roses, who is an avid cyclist, he has said the same thing that I've been saying for a long, long time. And that is, it is insane that we mix bicyclists with cars on the busiest roads. Right now, for example, the city, I was driving on 35th Northeast just yesterday afternoon, evening. And that's where they want to eliminate lanes of car traffic. They want to take these parking spaces and put a bike lane in. And they want to mix bicyclists with cars. Well, just a few blocks to the east, you have the Burke-Gilman Trail. You should put these bicyclists, and I'm one of them. I mean, I'm an avid bicyclist. We should put the bicyclists not on the main arterials, but put them on side streets. Move them over a block to 34th instead of mixing with cars on the busiest arterials. It's safer for the bicyclists. And they say, well, we don't want to slow down at every cross street. Well, that's just the price you'd have to pay for unbelievable increase in safety. But this policy, yeah, I drive Lake City Way quite often. And again, you have the Burke-Gilman Trail just to the east. But I will see bicyclists riding on Lake City Way in the right-hand lane of traffic where cars are going 45 miles an hour. And there's no sense at all to doing that. You got a great bike lane. I mean, I think Burke-Gilman is one of the region's transportation gems. But it's time to get bicyclists off the arterials. They're dying. It's dangerous for them. It gums up the cars. You know, Jenny Durkin, she says that she's on it. But you heard that first soundbite where a guy said, we've got to make changes to Rainier Avenue. No, we got to make changes to where we put the bikes.
It breaks my heart that this happens, has to happen to any family. We are better than that as a city and need to really make sure that as we grow as a city, that we're making sure that no parts of our city are left behind.
Yeah, but when you have people making policy, and, you know, the bike lobby, they're responsible for many of these bike deaths. They know that it'd be safer to get the bicycles off the arterials, but they'd rather destroy, I mean, because it's not about making it safer for bikes. It's about destroying things for cars. And when that's your top priority, people are going to die. And that is your big lead. We're also monitoring this Michael Cohen story. Let me take you to a CBS update on that. A few months ago, King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg came on my show and said that he will no longer prosecute personal possession amounts of any drug here in King County. If somebody has heroin, meth, anything in small amounts, they will not get prosecuted. And there are other low-level crimes that the prosecutor's office has long said they do not have the resources to prosecute. And I want to get an update on all of this. So let me welcome to the show your King County prosecutor, Dan Satterberg. Dan, I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
Hi, Dory.
What kind of crimes are we talking about that are getting dismissed here?
Here's the thing. I have 28 deputy prosecutors in trials. We're doing 2 murder cases, 2 rape cases, 4 rape of child cases, 6 assault with firearms. We have robbery, car theft, burglary, felony domestic violence, and identity theft cases. So, you know, we are doing the most serious cases that come to us. These cases take a long time to prosecute.
Mm-hmm.
The people that we're prosecuting are serious dangers to the community, and they're off to prison for a very long period of time.
Right.
I have the same number of prosecutors today that I had 10 years ago. I have not been able to grow my staff. In fact, the first couple of years that I was prosecutor, we lost 51 FTEs due to the Great Recession, and I haven't built them back up yet, despite the fact that we have 250,000 more people in our county than we did 10 years ago. So,
and that's something where I would certainly be an advocate for you getting more resources, because, you know, I see stories like, Ed Murray added 1,300 City of Seattle workers. King County has added 1,000 workers in the last couple of years. And the fact that you're not getting your share of these increases, that shows to me a disturbing lack of prioritization from the people who make these budget decisions.
Well, we're not funded to do all the work that comes to us, and so we do have to pick and choose the cases and our priorities. And I suspect that the choices that we make to do the serious violent crimes and the repeat chronic property offenders are the choices that most people would make given that. So,
okay.
You know, the cases that are being sent back are cases that that are the lowest level misdemeanors that come to us, and frankly, cases where that do take a long time to resolve because the people tend to be not at a stable address, and so warrants are issued in those cases.
Yeah, no,
I
get
to go
that.
Out and make arrests. So.
Yeah, well, and the reason we reached out to you a couple of days ago because I didn't know that announcement was coming out, but a few months ago you came on with me. You told me and my listeners that you're not going to prosecute personal possession amounts of any drug, heroin, meth, anything, and. You know, I told you at the time that just sounded like terrible policy, and now that we're several months into this, I wanted to talk about what has been my main on-air criticism, and that is I think that we have policies that are attracting drug vagrants from all around the country to King County, to the Puget Sound area, because the word is out that this is the easiest place to be a drug addict. You're not gonna be prosecuted if you're holding, and I wanted to hear from your perspective, because that's mine. I wanted to get your perspective on how this policy is working out.
So the possession of personal use amount that what we've talked about is under a gram, but most of the cases are 0.02 grams. That's $20 worth. So it might be a syringe full that a person hadn't been able to shoot up before they got stopped.
Right.
Those cases take about a year to resolve. Each case averaged 1.5 warrants on that case. So that means police have to spend half a shift to arrest and book somebody in on the warrant. At the end of a year, they would resolve with a guilty plea to a gross misdemeanor and no offer of help to anybody. We estimated it cost taxpayers about $3 million a year to process those cases, and for no purpose that satisfied public safety or that offered any help to people with drug addiction. So instead, we've taken the $3 million and we're expanding the LEAD program into Burien and White Center, and that will start next month. And the police there are excited to have that tool, because the tool that we have right now, which is jail, doesn't help people with the serious drug problems, but the LEAD program is a way to that where the police have the tool to call a case manager to begin to work with somebody who's often chronically mentally ill and drug addicted,
yeah.
Maybe homeless as well.
And I have no problem with the LEAD program. No, I think
okay,
the LEAD
good.
Program makes a lot of sense. But what about my point that the word is out and we have people, we've had several high profile stories where women have been horribly raped by people who came here from Arizona, from Texas. We are attracting the worst drug dregs from around the country because of what our policies are here. This is the easiest place in the United States to be a drug addict, isn't it?
You prosecution standpoint. Sex offenders, which we do prosecute, as I say, I've got two violent rapists on trial right now.
Right.
And they came. I don't think that they came here from another place. I think they are local people who grew up here who prey on people here. So I think it's wrong to say that people who have a drug addiction are violent rapists.
I didn't say that. No,
well,
no. But what I said is
because of our drug policies.
Well, but
and then they rape people.
Well, I mean the woman who was attacked in the restroom at Golden Gardens when she was out on a training run. That guy came from Arizona. The woman who was brutally raped at a Ballard car dealership. That guy came from Texas. And I'm not saying all drug users are sex offenders, but I'm saying we are attracting a lot of people with our drug policies who happen to also be, horrible criminals in other ways.
Well, I don't know if that's true across the board. You've found a couple of stories, but the point is that we've got to make decisions about how we're going to use the scarce resources of the criminal justice system, and putting people in court and in jail for possessing tiny amounts of drugs is silly. It costs us a ton of money. It doesn't result in anybody getting any better, and it clogs the courts that we need for these violent crimes that we're prosecuting. So, the sociological movement of people who have drug addictions, I think it certainly needs to be studied. I don't see the people who are chronically drug addicted as very mobile. Most of the people we see can barely get through the day because they're so focused on finding drugs today.
Well,
I'm not saying this doesn't have a huge impact on I mean, the drug addiction, the mental health crisis that is in our community is real. And the question is, what's the best tool to address that? And putting people into court, into misdemeanor court, and taking a year to resolve their cases and spending $3 million a year to do that, to me, doesn't make very much sense when we could take that money and try to alleviate some of the harm that people are doing, not only to themselves, but to the community that they live in.
Okay, but I still argue that we are on the wrong path. Tell you what, Dan, hold on. We are going to continue the conversation with Dan Satterberg. Are we on the best path to deal with what is a crisis in our region? My conversation with Dan Satterberg continues in just a moment here on the Dory Monson Show.
But I don't think that the answer to drug addiction is going to be found in a prison cell or in a courtroom. But there are people who, in addition to their drug use, in addition to their behavioral health issues, are also criminally oriented. And we prosecute them. I don't think people should have to put up with burglaries and car thefts and car prowls. And we do prosecute those cases. The simple possession of a tiny amount of drugs to me was, these are cases that come to us not because we're the best option, but because we're the only one that's been built. And we need to work on building a different response that police can have. I mean, that's the whole thing about the LEAD program. I'm glad to hear that you're a supporter.
I am.
This is a
I've looked into it deeply.
Decision.
Right.
Yeah, the police get to decide who gets this help and who doesn't. And they're in a perfect position to be able to do that because they've arrested a lot of these people numerous times. There's a lot of frustration and there's a lot of finger pointing and people saying, well, we just need to put more people in jail for longer. I'm not sure that that's the answer for everybody. It's the answer for some people. And we certainly do put a lot of people in jail and send a lot of people to prison for violent crimes. The question is, what do we do with these, the very lowest level crimes that are really where the root of the issue is a behavioral health, mental health issue.
Right. Well, there are two issues here, and that's what's best for the individual. And like I said, I think a lot of them, sadly, have just made choices to make this their lifestyle. And what's best for our society, and it just seems like our region is on a wrong path. Let me play for you a soundbite real quick, and I won't take more of your time. But Cairo 7 talked to a street vagrant named Travis Burge, and I played this on my show yesterday.
There's nothing in my life that makes me functional, quite like meth. I use dirty needles. I shoot up AIDS.
And he talked about looking for cops so he could shoot up right in front of them.
I go around and look for cops, and once I find cops, then I'll shoot up. And I'll be like, best friends.
So, I mean, is that true? People can shoot up right in front of a police officer with impunity here?
Police have the same authority to make arrests that they've always had. We've done nothing to change that, and they can make that arrest. I saw that guy, and he's clearly got a lot of issues.
Yeah.
He's a frequent, no doubt he's a frequent utilizer of the jail, of the courts, of the hospitals, of the emergency services. He is going to end up with some sort of horrific medical condition because of his indiscriminate use of the syringe. And so he's going to end up costing the taxpayers of our community a lot of money. And he's created a lot of chaos on the streets, and people, I'm sure, go out of their way to walk around him. The question is, what's the best way to help him, to help the community, to do less harm, so he does less harm to people? I mean, I don't know if he's done something to put him in prison, but what he's doing by, having a syringe and shooting up in front of a police officer is not the kind of thing that's going to send him to prison, that's going to get him off the streets. It is going to kill him eventually.
Well, I know the cops have the same discretion, but they're not going to arrest somebody if they know that you're not going to prosecute him. I mean, that's a total waste of police resources then.
Well, right now, the cases that with the minor possession of your daily amount of drugs, the police will make an arrest. They usually takes about 3 months for them to send us the case to have it filed. In the meantime, the person's been released from jail. And then after we file the case, it's nobody's top priority. I told you where our priorities are.
I got you.
But after we file the case, then we got to go find that guy. And then we got to book him into jail and start all over again and pay for lawyers for him. And, what he needs some significant psychiatric support, some other help. It's not going to be found in the jail. For a moment, it will make people feel better to arrest him and put him in jail, I suppose, but it's not a long-term solution for him.
Look, I know this is the biggest issue that our region is dealing with right now. I appreciate you always coming on with me and talking about it. And when you need a public advocate for increasing your staffing, you got one right here, because I think that our priorities at the budget-making level are pretty upside down right now.
Well, I appreciate that, and I hate to be the one to speak the truth to you, but we are not funded to do all the work that comes to us, and I'm not sure that the court and the prison is the way to resolve these essential, you know, these complicated social problems that are out on our streets.
All right. Dan, I really do always appreciate you taking the time. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Dwight.
King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg joining us. I'd love to hear your thoughts on all this. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. That's 98973. I gave you a lot of information there. And you've heard both sides, my perspective and the prosecutors. Let me know what you think. 98973 is the text line. Lots more straight ahead on the Dory Monson Show.